We are back to the Dave Nemo Show. Bruce McDonald is joining us this morning. I'm going to just kind of start off by saying, Bruce, good morning. Thank you for making the time on Memorial Day on this wonderful weekend of programming. You're our last guest this morning. So much of this is possible because of our friends over at Fastport with their transition trucking program. I wanted to ask you, how in the heck you met Brad Bentley?
That's a good question. Thanks for having me, too, by the way. Brad's the reason I'm here. You know, I met Brad because he is getting a master's degree at Arizona State in World War II history. And his professor was my old college roommate, Mark Thibault. So when I connected with Mark to talk about my project, the Remembered Life Project, he sent Brad out for the opening of our latest exhibit opening in San Francisco. And he flew out. I met him, gosh, it must have been back in October of last year. So that's how we met.
It's crazy. You know, when Brad told me that story about how he was making I call it an adventure in education, I was so deeply moved. My father, by the way, right around the same age that Brad is now at the same time, he went back and got his master's degree in theology. And I just remember I'm always in deep admiration of people who take that second, not going back to finish up what was undone, but going like, you know what, I need to kind of deepen my experience. And I ask all of that too, that depth of experience, because all of this begins, I'm just going to simply say the words shoebox. Because if you begin with shoebox, uh-huh, you can really explain this whole project you're into. Would you dive in?
Exactly. Yeah, sure. So, you know, my uncle, he was my great uncle, Fred McDonald. He was my grandmother's brother. And, you know, he served in the 12th Army Group as a chaplain because he was already in the Episcopal Church. But the shoebox comes in because when he was over there, he got to Normandy about 2 months after D-Day. And his job really was to find suitable venues, churches that weren't unstable and weren't too bombed out to hold services for the troops when they would get a break from the front lines. And he started noticing lots of broken glass on the ground from the stained glass windows that had been shattered. And being the pack rat that he kind of was, he loved collecting things. He had a great collection of menus from around the world, for example, that he gave me. He started picking them up, putting them in his pocket, and he would put them in an envelope and then mail them home to his mother, not knowing what he would do with them, but just knowing he thought this was going to be something that would be important to him. And so after the war, he had a collection that his mother kept of 25 envelopes from different places across Europe that he had been to. And he literally kind of just tucked them away under his bed. And I had never even heard about them until fast forward to his living in San Francisco in a retirement home, the Sequoias. And he mentioned these shards of glass to someone else who lived there who was into stained glass. Jean Wright was her name. Pulled them out, and she was fascinated by not just the glass itself, but the stories that he told her and the memories that he still had about each of these places. So she put him in touch with a stained glass artist who was living in Berkeley at the time, Armel LaRue, who ironically was from Britain. She was French. And the two of them conceived of this whole project, which was taking the broken pieces of glass and taking his memories of those places and putting together another kind of larger stained glass window, but not always windows, sometimes art objects. They worked into different ways. They actually brought 12 other artists in on the project. And he would sit with them and talk about his memories, and then they would come up with a new concept of how to memorialize these pieces of glass and the places that they were from. And that's where the shoebox came from.
Yeah, I tell you, because sometimes, you know, there are things, you know, Dave and I were talking about this before the show, during the show. It's breathtaking, is it not? I mean, like you said, there are things that we talk about, the idea of breathtaking or awestruck, and those terms get thrown around a lot. I tend to be kind of reserved about using them because they mean something. But the scope of the artistic generosity and the spiritual generosity of the act, because it requires the kind of patience, it requires a meticulous, approach by the meticulous. Really kind of make this happen, because you're talking about it's as if on a kid scale, walking into somebody's attic and finding hundreds of boxes of jigsaw puzzles, and half of them are missing their pieces, and the other half are mixed up in different boxes, so that you have all the pieces, but they're in different boxes and all that kind of stuff. And then setting about to figure out to make some sort of meaning of all of this. The other question I wanted to ask you is, do you feel like in many ways this is an attempt to create meaning in the aftermath of something that was so terrible?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, he was, well, let me give you a little background about him, too. You know, he had been to Europe in 1933, and he was had a real interest in traveling the world and learning about other places and people, and he happened to be there just 4 months after Hitler took power. And he mentions very honestly and candidly how he was really impressed with what Hitler was doing for Germany at the time. And I think we forget that early on, it wasn't apparent, especially to those outside of Germany, what was going to happen. And he actually saved a small flag with a swastika on and brought it back because he thought it was going to be something good for Germany. And then, of course, months went on and he started learning a lot more about what was going on. And he felt, I think, ashamed and betrayed by someone who had fooled him, and he was a smart man. So I think that was really his motivation to enlist and join in the effort to eradicate Hitlerism and all that it stood for, was his quote. But he felt, you know, a real sense of duty to do this, and, you know, he was able to get over there and be a part of it, and obviously these shards of glass for him represented, you know, all of this experience that he had been through, and he really wanted to share this with others. So, you know, one of his fears too was when he died, all of his collection of things would just be stuck in an attic and forgotten, as you mentioned. But he took great care in organizing things and keeping them. And so for him, I think it was a real joy and a sense of completion of project, so that this memory that he had, an experience that he had, would not be forgotten. And it could be shared with others, and then Armel and the other artists kind of brought it all to fruition for him, and that's why it's exciting to get this exhibit out to others and to see, you know, one person's experience and how they remembered it and memorialized it.
You know, Bruce, there are a lot of ways to kind of go back to World War II here and talk about your grandfather, but I'm reading the article in the Frederick News Post about the Lights Project and everything. And I just wanted to read a quote from him because I think this really speaks to what you just said in a way. He says, "I had just arrived in Normandy. There was an apple orchard where our army headquarters was tented. In the evening, I walked into the flattened town spread out around a badly bombed church. A ghostly silence covered the deserted area, except for the shoveling noise of a lone man trying to uncover his house. He saw me and glared. I represented the war, which had brought ruin to his house and home. I picked up some of the church glass and moved on." I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that quote is in the piece, the Perry Mann piece is the first piece, at least in when he got to Normandy. And Armel made that piece, and she did it using a piece of burnt wood to represent the house itself. And then his words, that exact quote is inscribed on the wood with the small piece of glass, which was from a small chapel that he had seen in that town. Yeah, and that's the essence of the exhibit. It's his memory etched somehow onto the piece, and then there's an artist's statement separate next to it of how the artist has interpreted his memory and the glass itself.
Mm-hmm. Bruce,
so there's 24 more of those of his memories like that.
Yeah, wow. And that actually sets up my next question for our listeners. How do you curate something like this? I mean, the thing is, people don't realize nowadays when it comes to museum exhibits, when it comes to mobile exhibits, any sort of history, sort of in action and motion, so much more than just putting it up there and showing it to people now goes into all of this work. Talk a little bit about the logistics of curation for something. This is an event, 24 of these. This is an event. How do you put this together?
Yeah, so I, you know, like I said, I didn't even hear about this stained glass until he had already started the project with Armel and others. And I embarrassingly, I live in San Francisco and I was in touch with him regularly, but I found out when they were almost done with it. And I knew that, you know, at that point he was 90, 91, and he wanted them to be permanently donated and displayed at the Presidio Chapel in San Francisco at the Presidio. But we knew we had a large project, fundraising project, which I'll also mention later, to raise money to build a wing onto it so we could make a home for these windows somehow to be displayed. And in the meantime, we thought, well, gosh, we should put an exhibit together that we can travel around and show people while we're raising the funds. So we hired a local museum specialist, the Civic Group, to help us, guide us through, well, what could we do with just not showing these pieces by themselves, but tell a compelling story. And he, you know, fortunately, he had left, he wrote an autobiography, so there's lots of information to fill in around the windows and what we did with, and we had a professional film crew shoot lots of interview footage of him. So we have an exhibit that starts with about 5 to 7 minutes about him talking in his own words about his experience during the war, and then the exhibit goes basically piece by piece, starting in England, where he first got sent, and then through France, kind of as he progressed through the war and as the Allies moved into Germany. So there's a chronological order to it. And between each piece, we created 25 storyboards to add some flavor or impressions and opinions that he noted while he was there. So you not only get to see the pieces themselves, but you get to know the man and his observations, which, like I said, some of them are very frank and honest. And I think that's what makes the exhibit particularly special. When you get to see it, is you really get to know him and someone who, as he calls himself in his autobiography, it's called Remembered Light, From a Stranger of Another Age. That was how he titled his book. And I think it's important to understand him as much as it is the art itself.
There are so many of these works that take the breath away. And for those who don't get a chance to see them in the real, can you direct people to a place where they can actually see the work in its totality?
Yeah, so we have a website, rememberedlight.org. And we just produced this recently to make the exhibit more interactive. So while you're going through the exhibit, you can scan a QR code and go to the website and find out more information. This is actually something we've done in collaboration with Mark Thibault and Brad and the program at Arizona State, is so that you can learn a lot more about the exhibit and about his experience in the war in general at the website. So that's an important element right there.
Before we run out of time here, and boy, this went by as fast as I thought it was going to go by. You guys have plans. It's not just, we're not just static, even if we're just kind of traveling around. You've got bigger plans. You actually alluded to them. Can you kind of tell us what the future holds for Remembered Light?
Right. So our ultimate goal is to raise $14 million to create a permanent home at the Presidio Chapel. And in the meantime, we want to keep this thing moving. You know, as I mentioned, my uncle's fear was that, you know, these things would be stored away and never seen again. So, you know, as important as it is to build a permanent home, I think it's important to get it out and around traveling. And so, you know, it's already been shown in San Francisco. We had got it up to Tacoma, close to where I grew up and where all of our family is. And most recently, it was actually in San Francisco again. But before that, we got to the National World War II Museum for a whole year, which was a big coup for us. And now going forward, Brad introduced us to the American Military Veterans Museum in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah,
so we're in talks with them now, and we're going to try and mount the exhibit there in the fall of next year. So in the meantime with that, you know, my uncle after the war was sent by the Episcopal Church to be the headmaster at the Ilani School there from about 50 to 55. So we were just recently meeting with the headmaster, the Ilani, and trying to find an appropriate venue in Hawaii because of his connection to having been there. And there's a ton of military and bases in Hawaii, so we think we're going to find the right venue pretty quickly. So we're hoping to get that kind of shoehorned in before we go to Columbus. So that's the immediate plans.
Okay, and I'm asking this of every single guest we've had on the show this morning. It's as much for fun and reflection. So many people have come on the show this morning and all weekend long and talked about, you know, Memorial Day is such a kind of a solemn day, but it's also, it's part of a weekend that kicks off the summer. for many people in the mm-hmm. United States. And so many people did not fight for, like, the gnashing of teeth and some kind of military display of strength on the streets of the Capitol. What they fought for was a chance for people to enjoy barbecues, enjoy poolsides, enjoy Little League, enjoy a day at a museum. How would you kind of help people strike the balance between what goes on at the, you know, what goes on in regards to honoring those who are no longer with us while still enjoying the weekend?
Well, to enjoy the weekend, we had my son's 7th birthday party up here at my my property in Sonoma, so we had that part of the enjoyment. And honestly, you know, I love history and I love reflecting on the past. And I've been lucky that, you know, people in my family, like my uncle, have memorialized their experiences. And, you know, I think it's easy enough to take a moment by yourself, even if need be, and, you know, check out the website, rememberedly.org, or read about something about the military service of others, especially, you know, for someone like me who's never served in the military. I think just, you know, going out and searching out those stories of people who have and remembering what they have done and what they have contributed. That's how I would, I guess, cast it.
Rememberedly.org. The other thing I wanted to ask you is it ready for the terrible questions? Like, what's your favorite Beatles song? Here you go. What's your favorite piece of the exhibit? What's the one that always kind of draws you in? Say Bartholomew for me just knocks me on my tuchus. But what for you kind of does it?
So I'll be honest with you. I was never a fan of old-fashioned stained glass. And when I heard about the project, I thought, oh, gosh, a bunch of old stained glass windows. How do you make that exciting? And, of course, when I first saw them, the one that struck me because it was really kind of modern and very beautiful was the Coventry, the one from Coventry Church. It's a very large piece. You can find it on the website. All the pieces are on there. And it's got the image, the bombed out image of the Coventry Church, which you can still go to Coventry Cathedral and see the kind of, they kind of built around it. They restored it, but they kept some of the broken elements of it. And Armel kind of kept that image in the larger piece, and the colors that she used around it are just gorgeous. So that's my personal favorite, to be honest with you.
That is a
second. Everybody has different opinions about that.
Yeah, I like Love Me Do the best. No, the joke I was making too is that I just there's one that haunts me, and the most haunting one for me is St. John Red Lion Square. That woman's stare just seems to be staring backwards in the past of a world that is bombed out of existence and has been reconstructed in this kind of ghostly fashion. Guys, if you get a chance, head over to rememberedlight.org. Find out about the exhibit, Fred's journey. You can visit over there. You can find out more about this remarkable program. Bruce, you're welcome back anytime, and we're going to find a way to get over there and see it and be a part of it as well. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Bruce McDonald, everybody, and you can. And by the way, he is the founder, one of the founders of a remarkable restaurant called Foreign Cinema over in San Francisco. That's one of the best places I've ever eaten at, Dave. Just really, really loved it a lot. Really loved it. Didn't make the connection until Brad sent me the note who he was. Because I actually, when I went to San Francisco back in the early aughts, he was one of the places a friend of mine took me. He said, you'll really like this place. And I really, really dug it. It's a great exhibit, isn't it?
Incredible. It is incredible. I like the Verdun because it has three musical notes on it, and it was done by the originating artist, if you will, Ms. LaRue, and she said that it also stands as a warning that the music repeats itself. Let us not let history repeat itself. It's pieces from a synagogue, a Catholic, and a Protestant church, three pieces together in one called Verdun.
We will wrap this up on the other side of the break. We took it late to hear Bruce full throttle. We'll be back after these messages.